Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Work Podcast. I'm Kathy Taylor, U.S. Commissioning Editor at Work, and today we are doing a deep dive into this year's Super Bowl advertising with a special lens on how well the ads portrayed the U.S. in all of its staggering diversity. Drawing over 100 million U.S. viewers, the Super Bowl is far and away the biggest TV audience of the year in the States and watched by people from all age groups, regions, and ethnicities. So looking at it through the lens of diversity is particularly on point. With that in mind, with us today on the podcast are three industry experts who've studied this: Morgan Gregory, founder and CEO of All Told, which is a company of AI experts using the technology to further more inclusive and inspiring representation in advertising and all media; Walt Geer, Chief Creative Officer Innovation at VML; and Nate Swift, Chief Strategy Officer at the Chicago agency O'Keefe, Reinhardt, and Paul. So hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. So did you all enjoy the game?
It was fantastic. I think we had a great time. And, you know, I'm sure all of us had kids running around everywhere, doing all kinds of craziness, eating all kinds of snacks and fun stuff. But it was great. It was entertaining and great commercials and a close game. What more could we all ask for?
Morgan, how was your big game?
It was chaotic and fun and energy filled. Definitely kids running around eating snacks, enjoying the halftime show, watching the ads, and watching a little bit of football too. It was great.
So Nate?
Yeah, same here. Entertaining, especially towards the end. Really enjoyed the advertising this year, more so than in the past. And I think that the halftime show was a hit, at least with my kids. And us too. So we loved it.
Well, what else can you really ask for? And just to clarify, even though you're Nate Swift, you're not related to Taylor Swift, right?
No relation to Taylor Swift.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good.
But we're gonna pretend for today's call.
We can pretend. And so every once in a while, we'll call up and make reservations just under Swift.
T Swift.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Exactly.
My brother's named Teddy, so it works out for him sometime.
Right. Well, there you go. So we're gonna make this thing go viral, and that's how we'll do it. So in my household, it was all people from Boston, and so the favorite was the Dunkin' Donuts ad, but we were not very a representative audience. And that's really what we're here to talk about is inclusivity and diversity in the Super Bowl. So we're going to get the scene set for us by Morgan, because her company really focuses on looking at advertising through the lens of diversity. And she has some quick facts to share with us on 50 years of Super Bowl advertising.
Yes, to sum up 50 years in 2 minutes. So at All Told, just to set the stage a little bit, at All Told, we're a responsible AI company with tools to measure on-screen inclusion in ads. So what we do is we have technology. We take the ads that are shown on screen, bring them into our platform, use AI to detect the people that show up on screen in the ads. And then we look at gender expression, age, skin tone, sexual orientation, body size, and visible disability of those people we see on screen. What that allows us to do is build analytics to show us how inclusive the ads are. So what we did before this game, and I know we'll get to what happened in the big game, we looked at the past 50 years of Super Bowl ads, and we found some really interesting trends and findings. And so just to give you a couple of the highlights, when we look at gender expression and skin tone, we see an increase in on-screen inclusion over the course of 50 years. It's slow progress, and in some cases, it's a bit of a two steps forward, one step back type of progress, but it is progress. To give you a little example, we got up to about 35% of screen time being given to people with a feminine gender expression over the past couple of years. But when we compare that to the population, which is 50.4% female, we're not quite at parity. But it's better than where we started at about 18% 50 years ago. A similar story with skin tone. When we look at, and we can dive into that more later as well. When we look at age and body size, we haven't seen an increase in inclusion along those dimensions. So the historically underrepresented groups there are older adults, people age 55 and above, or people with larger body sizes. And for both of those groups, we've seen a 50-year stagnation, just hovering around 6 to 7% of screen time for people with larger body sizes, around 10 to 11% for older adults. Then when we look at visible disability and sexual orientation, these are the two areas where we see the least amount of inclusion across, to be honest, all forms of media, not just ads. And so to give you an example, of the 20,000 people or more than 20,000 people that we detected across these 50 years of ads, only 66 were shown with a visible disability. Now, over half of those are shown in the past 10 years. So there is an increase in inclusion, but it's still a very small amount, a very small number. When we look at sexual orientation, and this is, I think, a little bit unique to ads because ads are short form content. And if, you know, if a partnership or an intimate interaction or romance isn't part of the storytelling, we're not going to be able to make that annotation. So only about 7.5% of the people we see on screen are shown in that context where we can even make that annotation. Now, of that small group, the smallest part of that group is the people who are shown as gay or lesbian. And we see that kind of hovering between two people, maybe four people in a year. And again, the first time that we saw somebody in an authentic gay or lesbian role in a commercial was in 2014. And we haven't seen a lot of increase or we haven't seen a big increase in inclusion since then. It's a little bit sporadic, kind of sprinkled here or there. But that just brings us up to, that doesn't include yesterday's data, which we can pull in later.
No, that's really interesting. I was sort of excited in a weird way by the commercial about the menopause drug, because it was focused obviously towards women and obviously older women. And I thought, well, that's kind of a breakthrough. But so, Walter, what were your observations about yesterday, just as itself and as a comparison with previous years?
I think it was on par with previous years. I don't, you know, one thing I noticed, and I'm sure Morgan, you could probably speak to this better than me, but like majority of the talent seemed to be over 50, right? So if we're talking about inclusivity in terms of age, there's a lot of older folks, not to say that over 50 is old. I'm pushing 50 soon, but like, I'm just saying there are a lot of people over the age of half a century who were in a lot of these spots. And it was really interesting to see, you know, brands tapping into nostalgia as a way in. Now, let's be clear, nostalgia has always been, at least for the past few years, a way in, but lots of kind of funny stuff poking here and there. But even when you're talking about, you know, pharma and that brand, you know, Pfizer had a spot as well, right? And so, like, you think about, like, well, who's Pfizer trying to target? And if you look at a multitude of those ads and you just kind of bring them all in together, it seemed as though, you know, brands were trying to reach every audience, right? That every audience from, like, kids with movies like Wicked, right, or teens or whatnot, to, you know, Beyonce fans, which really includes, like, encompasses a whole large amount of individual. And of course, you know, the Swift effect of, like, so you're gonna assume, you know, older women, middle-aged women, younger women are there. So, you know, it was interesting to see how broad the net that was being casted was.
Well, at least we seem to have moved on from only men watch the Super Bowl. If we haven't, then we're in even more trouble than I think. So Nate, your agency took a bit of a, I wouldn't say different tack, but it did choose to put an ad on Univision. And I'm sorry if the advertiser is escaping me right at this moment, but decided not to you know, go for the $7 million Super Bowl buy, but really target the audience on a channel that's very, you know, very, very key to you know, the Hispanic audience.
Yeah. So the client was Metro by T-Mobile. And yeah, Univision indicated pretty early on that they were going to put a lot of time, effort, resources behind their broadcast of the Super Bowl. And that got Metro and our team really excited about what the potential to create kind of a Spanish language specific Super Bowl ad is 60 seconds with Luis Guzman. We really treated it like, you know, a general market Super Bowl ad, and we're able to kind of bring sensibility, bring the that type of energy, that type of fun to the stage. And it's a brand that has a really rich Hispanic audience. It's got a very strong multicultural audience as a whole, but a lot of Spanish speakers, a lot of first generation Hispanics. And it was a great opportunity that we saw to really kind of celebrate The NFL celebrate the Super Bowl, celebrate the brand in a way that's kind of very culturally American, but through a very specifically Hispanic lens. So it created a lot of excitement over on our team.
Well, and also I think over the years, and we have another piece of content on Work that talks about the Super Bowl and the Latina audience that was, you know, written a couple of weeks ago, talks about how, you know, on the traditional broadcast, there is some progress there. And so there are a bunch of ads I wanted to just briefly unpack here. And one was the Dina and Mita ad for Doritos, which, you know, was an ad that to an extent that more than most of the ads was not just, you know, putting, you know, two abuelas on camera and just it was taking some culture into account. I have seen things read that it got into some stereotypes. But I mean, did you feel like, you know, the ads were representing culture or just representing faces from different checkboxes, if you will? Walter, do you want to take that? I see you nodding.
No, I mean, it's a really, really good question. I mean, I saw that spot. I liked it. I thought it was good. I think here's the thing. When you talk about, it's one thing to talk about diversity in ads, right? And that's cool. We can look across the, you know, spectrum of ads that played last night, and you could agree that there was some diversity across ads. Most of these spots were 50 plus white men, right? But still, there was some diversity when you looked around. But the bigger question is, when you have those diverse cast members, what does diversity look like behind the camera, right? What does diversity look like in regards to the ad agency or the people that are actually writing the scripts and writing these spots? And that's where you start to get into like really kind of sticky stuff. You know, I had a Super Bowl spot run last night as well, Progressive, right? And it was for, you know, the watch party. And we ended up having Kid and Play involved, and it just made sense. But for the brand, because Progressive, homeowners insurance, and then this duo, hip hop duo from, you know, the late 80s, who are known for a movie called House Party, kind of damages house. And so, you know, when we did that, of course, it was like you have to look into every single nuance, every single bit to ensure that the way they're speaking is right, because I'm not going to have them showing up and like, yo, homie, this and that, like, because that's not how they speak, right? But like, how do you kind of create a really authentic moment for the people that are actually watching? So, you know, the Dorito spot, cool, great. I thought it was great. You know, should I look through it again to probably really assess with a fine-tooth needle? Yeah, absolutely. But then when I look at ads like Pfizer, and now, you know, I'm going to be completely candid, right? And Pfizer was a client I worked on, like, great, clever, completely different from a pharma point of view in terms of, and in regards to something that they would ever do, right? I mean, pharma's been most certainly kind of changing the way they market now over the past like 6, 7, 8 months or a year. But then like, as an individual who I also work in pharma stuff too, like I look at that and it was like, what was it, 175 years in Pfizer or whatnot? And they're going back through all these images and these photos and this, you know, the stuff. And I was like, all I saw was white people, except for like a black woman later on, and then a black woman that seemed to be a nurse or a doctor at the very tail end. And so my mind went straight to, wow, this is a great spot. But then I'm like, well, it's not really solving an issue if you're saying, hey, Pfizer's been here for 175 years, you should trust us. And over the past, you know, years, we've seen a multitude of issues when it comes to the black community actually trusting some of these pharma companies. And then you get into things like, you know, like, I mean, you go whole, you know, left and right, but like the past 3 years and the shot and like trust and what that meant in the black community. So again, like one of those things, if I was involved with the work, I would have very clearly saw, hey, you know, maybe we pivot this way, or maybe we change the work this way, or add this. But again, you know, you have to have the right individuals in the room to make it make sense. Me and Nate aren't going to do an ad for tampons and make it make work for everybody. It would, like, it's not going to work, right? Because we just don't know everything, right? So you have to have women involved in something like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Pfizer ad was interesting for a lot of reasons, you know, some of which aren't really the focus of this podcast. But yeah, it does make you, all of that stuff makes you wonder, like, who's behind the camera? So Morgan, did you have any thoughts about the Pfizer ad?
I mean, I think the Pfizer ad, when we looked at it, and here's just a little bit about AI, right? Our AI detects people. So it does detect the people in the images. It doesn't universally detect people in paintings well. So we actually won't annotate people in paintings. So our analytics for the Pfizer ad look like it's quite inclusive because it's excluding all the people that Walter just mentioned who are shown actually, you know, these white men from 100 and some odd years ago that were shown in paintings. I wanted to go back, though, to your question about the Dina and Mita ad, the Doritos one, because I think there was a couple of things that Walter said that I wanted to kind of pull together. One is this idea around representation of older adults, people over age 55. Absolutely, what Walter said, I did see it too. A lot of it was celebrities and older men, to be honest, that were cast in these roles. And that was driving a lot of the inclusion. So actually, last night in the Super Bowl this year, we did see an increase in representation for older adults that was largely driven by these celebrities that were older men. There were a few examples that I saw where we did see older women on screen. The Dina and Mita, the Doritos ad was one of them. Another one, and the other ones are a little bit more subtle, but there was a Lindor ad and there was a Reese's ad that had one person in kind of an ensemble cast that didn't get as much screen time that was shown to be an older adult who was a woman. Those were kind of shorter kind of camera pans through or kind of had lower screen time representations, but they were there and they weren't celebrities. I thought that was interesting. What I did like about the Dina Mita ad was the kind of the representation of an older woman who's like a badass abuela, right? Like they weren't being shown, they were being shown actually with mobility assistant devices, but in a really fun way, not in a way where we need to take care of them, but where they are kind of owning their power and they're the central role and the protagonist of that commercial. So that was something that I did appreciate seeing in that ad yesterday.
Yeah, they're sort of mobily assisted devices as weapons, which is, kind of fun. So Nate, I wonder what your thoughts are here on the two commercials we've been talking about right now.
Well, the Pfizer one definitely stood out as, hey, this is a different look from Pfizer. Who is this? What are we talking about? But it was tough to miss that it was just a bunch of old white dudes. It was tough to miss. And it kind of ruined it, at least for me, because I did think it was, when you look at pharma advertising is getting more creative, more interesting, more dynamic. And then you have things like this, it really just kind of, it feels like, oh, it's stuck again. The Dina Mita ad, I loved, I think it was one, it was super on brand for Doritos, which, they always do a great job bringing ads that are really engaging, really fun, very specific, very bold. But the other thing to me, and Walt, I think you kind of mentioned a little bit about this, like people were being broad this year. Brands were being pretty broad. They were playing to the back of the room. And in that respect, and there was very hit or miss, not to say that as a body of work, every single advertiser did a good job with this. But when you look at an ad like Dina and Mita, it is a Hispanic forward, it's a Latino forward insight, way of looking at the world, bringing in those cultural cues, but done as a general market ad. And so some advertisers that we work with have a very strong point of view that multicultural advertising is general market advertising. It's total market advertising. And ads like that, you really felt it. When I see things like that, I'm very encouraged for the kind of collective future of this conversation, because it doesn't feel like there's this and there's that. It feels like it's, oh no, it's all a little bit more. And we can appreciate the nuances that a different culture brings to the conversation, see ourselves in that too.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting things about the Dina and Mita ad. Not the first time we've seen this, but there's some English, there's some Spanish. It's all delivered in a way that it's just all kind of flows very naturally. And that's what I thought was kind of strong about that ad. One other advertiser that did a lot with the game, not surprisingly, is the NFL. I wanted to talk a little bit about, especially, and this was not the only thing they did, they had a number of different sort of initiatives during the game, was the Born to Play ad featuring, the little boy from Ghana and really talking about the NFL's programs in markets all over the world. And we certainly get that most of these sports leagues want to be global now. But I wondered specifically about that ad. And so Walter, I think it's your turn to go first.
Yeah, I think it was beautifully done. I think NFL continues to land it every year, right? Last year they landed at a beautiful spot. This year they landed a beautiful spot as well. you know, and again, leaning away from the stereotypes, let's be honest, right? And this sounds going to sound fucked up, but like majority of the time when brands or people show, you know, Africans on TV, it's like they're the little fucking child with some bees or some fucking bugs or, you know, flies flying around. And I think that this was just a really beautiful way to just show that, hey, guess what? Like their neighborhoods areas look just like the places you live, right? And these kids over here are just like the kids around you that like strive to just want to do more and be more and want to have fun and want to, you know, play and delve into this sport. I just think it was just really, really, really well done. I mean, hats off to the team on that one.
Yeah, and bringing some players into it, which, you know, it may be obvious in one way, but it just really kind of, you know, also humanized, you know, the NFL players, which sometimes they feel, because of the helmets and all that, they feel a little obscure at times, right? Except for the most, you know, famous ones. So Morgan, did you have any thoughts about, you know, what the NFL did overall? Because they also addressed bullying. I'm not going to say they were all over the place, but they had a lot on their plate. Let's put it that way. So that was the NFL last night.
They did. I agree. I think this ad that was filmed in Africa was amazing. I really love the storyline. It was high action, the same way that the Run With It commercial was last year. You know, a lot of people in the background, busy scenes, really engaging. And also, I read somewhere, and don't quote me on this, but I think there were something like 200 people in the cast. We didn't detect all of them, but they were all from the local towns. And you can see that coming through. It really felt authentic there. I think the other spots, one, because I feel like I need to always call out the on-screen inclusion, and this one might have been subtle. The NFL had a NFL Shop commercial as well. It did have somebody with a visible disability. I'm not sure if you all caught that. There was somebody with a partially missing limb, an arm. So that was something that I'm not sure how many people caught it or not, but I always like to see that type of inclusion on screen as well.
I did not notice that. So Nate, what were your thoughts on the NFL and particularly the Ghana spot? Because I think that's the one that is most apropos to what we're discussing here today.
I mean, yeah, I think that Morgan and Walt kind of summed it up. It was a beautiful spot. It was a well-told story. It didn't portray Africa. It didn't portray the subject matter as something that was necessarily other. It just portrayed the inspiration and the dream of being an NFL player as global. And I thought it was great. I it's tough to argue with. I think the NFL in general has done a good job. There's not room for improvement, but has done a good job of using their platform to have meaningful conversations. I think the mental health work was meaningful. I think, like we talked about, the global work is meaningful. So, no, hats off. It was both entertaining and it was one of the few, there were several ads that were kind of gotten to a little more dramatic, a little more emotional. That to me, as far as the dramatic work, was far and away the most impactful.
So just to switch topics a little bit, like Nate, you were talking about playing to the back of the room. So I was really curious by the Bud Light ad when you consider everything that brand has been through in the last year. And it sort of felt like they were really trying hard to please everybody. And, you know, you could argue playing, you know, trying too hard. So I wondered what your perspective was on that commercial in particular.
First of all, as a advertiser and marketer, and we can go into the politics and we can go into the social commentary aside, but I have seen the situation with Bud Light deeply affect my clients that I work with. There is a level of cautiousness. Where they were emboldened to take on things that they really cared about in a very authentic way, there is much more of a level of kind of subdued wariness in kind of the full-throated support for purpose-driven work, cause-driven work, and socially progressive work. And that's a tough reality to be in. So with that said, I think that listen, I, as an advertiser and marketer, really appreciate the Bud Lights out there saying like, hey, we are, you know, the thing that everybody loves. Did I like that work very much? Not really. They were going back to very much that kind of up for whatever type vibe. My issue is more of a technical issue, actually, with the spot is best advertising is simple truth. It can be a really stupid truth, but like a really simple truth connected to something that everybody believes, like something as dumb as State Farm, Arnold Schwarzenegger can't pronounce their tagline. They made a meal out of that, and it was fun, and it was engaging. Bud Light Genie, not a thing. Like, it's just not something that anybody's familiar with. There's no truth in that. And so for me, it was more of a miss just because there was no truth in the fun, engaging, exciting world they were trying to present. And it felt hollow because of that. So that might not be the total kind of answer on are they doing the right thing from a diversity standpoint? Are they doing? I think it was an ad that was meant to bring energy, was meant to be popular, was meant to be fun, and just fell a little bit flat.
Well, that's one where you can see the brief. We pissed everybody off. So now we have to please everybody. So we're going to create a genie. And it was like almost too direct if you know the backstory, if you followed the backstory. Does anybody else have anything to say on that?
No, I think you both nailed it. It was funny. I thought the spot was funny, right? I laughed. I had my moments for sure. I mean, it kind of told us a bit of a story of like, hey, you can be whatever you want, whenever you want, right? But yeah, it's like, you know, the one, it's like the one time you're an asshole to someone and then you got to come back and kind of like act like everything's okay, but things kind of aren't okay. And it's that weird, like awkward moment. So to your point, you know, Kathy, it's like for the people that knew the backstory, yeah, it's like, they're trying to do it all in one spot type of thing. For someone who doesn't, I think it probably looked like a fun spot.
I think it's really interesting. And I would love to go back, and I probably will, to be honest, go back and look at the data for Bud Light specifically over the past number of years. Because when we think about, you know, what happened with Bud Light last summer, that wasn't a Super Bowl spot, right? And I think a lot of brands have a tendency to kind of shy away from inclusion and representation when they feel like the stakes are high, which is such an interesting kind of human behavior. Right? Because what the data shows us is that actually inclusive advertising is good for business. And so, but believing in that and taking that to heart when you're buying the most expensive ad spot and you're making the most expensive ad that you're going to make all year, it takes a lot of courage, but I think it will really pay off for the brands that do. And I would also say, Nate, I think you brought up a really interesting point here about, you know, the purpose advertising. Right. So having a purpose or having a mission or being forward with that. And I think we see that a lot. And, you know, I like to talk about this in the way that purpose advertising is actually different from inclusive marketing. Both are important. Both have their place. Right. But you can and should sometimes take a stand. Right. When the time and place is right. And maybe that's a Super Bowl ad for a brand. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's some other time of the year. And what that purpose or what that stand is for a brand is going to change and be different from brand to brand. But I think inclusive marketing, just having people in your ad from historically underrepresented groups and showing them an inspiring and authentic portrayals is something that everybody can do. And really, I mean, and I know I hear I'm biased, should do, right? It's good for business and it's really nice for all of us watching, right? For all of the viewers, for all of the Super Bowl viewers, for everybody watching any ad. And I think that, you know, that is the difference. When you look at the Bud Light commercial, right? They didn't even have to take a stand in a Super Bowl spot if they weren't feeling like they were in the position to do so. But they could have increased their inclusion along any number of dimensions and had that be, you know, their step back in the direction, which I think that they were trying to go in last year.
Another thing I just briefly wanted to discuss, though, is how we get away from these spots that where they sort of check different like ethnicity boxes, if you will. And I thought the Reese's commercial was really funny, but it's also sort of this strange thing where you're like, okay, white old lady, check, you know, Asian guy, check, you know, black dad, check, white guy, check. And it's sort of grew on kind of a universal truth of when somebody changes up their product, right? So that was cool. But it's also this kind of thing where it feels sort of performative. And I feel like I see that a lot in advertising, not just on the Super Bowl, where you feel somebody's in an ad because they need to check boxes and not because there's true belief and meaning behind it.
I feel like I talk a lot about how inclusive advertising drives business results. And I think it's also important to say that inclusive advertising or having an inclusive on-screen cast is not a silver bullet, right? You can't just cast people from a number of different historically underrepresented groups and go, there we go. Now I'm going to sit back and roll in the ROI that's going to come from this. I think advertising always has to start with the story, right? It has to be a good ad first. You have to connect with people first. And then once you have that, you know, creative, brilliant idea, then think about, okay, now how can I make sure that the people that I'm putting into this amazing, creative, brilliant idea, into this amazing story, are going to be, you know, representative, are going to like bring in people that we don't always see on screen. And so I think, you know, I agree, Kathy, you can't just do checkbox inclusion. It's not going to work in that way. We always have to lead with good creative.
No, I think Morgan nailed it. I think it's all in the storytelling. You can't just throw a cast in. What other people seem to forget as well is that, you know, depending on the topic that you get in, right? Like a brand can't just insert themselves in and be like, hey, we're here. We just showed up, right? Like it's about, you know, how are you doing it in an authentic way that allows that community to feel that sense of trust when you step into their conversation. You know, like I was, you know, launched a campaign for Advil or maybe like 6 or 7 months ago, they're getting into, you know, pain equity. And before jumping into a whole slew of tactics, a conversation we had to have first was, wait, hold on, you need to show this community first, because this is such a touchy topic, that you've listened, that you've heard, that you've understood, which meant, okay, can all those ideas, now we actually need to go out and how do we do things around driving awareness and driving discussions and amplifying their voices? And then you deserve the right to tap into this type of conversation with tactics and solutions.
I think the other it's such a great point. And we talk a lot about timeless stories and human stories, and really cultures share these human stories, these fundamental beliefs, the fundamental values. There's people, regardless of where you come from, are much more alike than they are different. And when you start with a brand's role in somebody's life, and then you overlay what the specific cultural experience, what the specific lived experience is onto that, you can create these really powerful stories that tell a story from a specific cultural lens, but feel relatable and universal to everybody. And I think that we too quickly get to, Kathy, to your point, and Morgan, kind of what you were saying, show this person here, and then that will check the box. But oftentimes the story is not authentic to the person being represented, or the story in and of itself really isn't explored or told in a human way at all. I think for what it's worth, I think the Reese's example worked just fine in what it was, because it was a simple thing about just changing a product. It was small, it was true, it was easy, and it didn't get into a human story. But I think so many brands do miss it when they try to tell a human story or have the ability to tell a human story and keep it generic and keep it flat without really kind of bringing in the texture of a lived experience or a cultural experience.
Obviously, we're very focused on Super Bowl advertising right now. And it is kind of a weird or atypical audience because it's so big and it is so diverse. So is there any chance we're kind of overplaying it in terms of the Super Bowl and diversity, or what should we be looking at in the broader advertising culture when usually the advertising is a bit more targeted than it is in the Super Bowl? So you can understand why a lot of advertisers, you know, do play to the back of the room. So I'll call on you, Walter, but what are your thoughts on like whether this is kind of overplayed because the Super Bowl is sort of a weird event in a sense, an anomaly?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question, right? Because, I mean, when you're talking about the Super Bowl, as we have said earlier, there's such a large amount of individuals that are watching that TV at the same time. It's not like targeting a mobile device based off location and weather and all of that type of stuff. So you're casting a broad net. I think Nate brought up a really great point earlier, too, is because when we talk about multicultural advertising, it is general marketing. It's the general market, right? So you know, Black, you know, and brown audience are responsible for about like a multi-trillion dollars of spending power, right, annually. So when you talk about how we're reaching people, again, authentic ways, but yes, it's like it's reaching, you know, individuals by way of fashion, entertainment, you know, all of that in music, right? And that it means like tapping into cultural in a really big way. And then to do that, it means tapping into a cultural insight that then makes you start to feel more authentic as a brand, et cetera. So it's this kind of layered approach. You know, I think different brands kind of went about that in different ways, right? But again, like the one thing you'll see consistently every single year is let's tap into a celebrity who's got a pre-existing audience that might be this particular demographic or that particular demographic, and let's lean in really hard and do something to make them, you know, feel relatable and human, right? Like the Dunkin' Donuts spot, right? The Dunkin' spot, Dunkin' Donuts, whatever. Like massive, massive star power. It's crazy. Like that's probably $60 million worth of talent that was on the screen at like one time, right? But also I believe that's Ben's agency did that, right? So I'm sure that, you know, they covered some fees in some way, shape or form, but like that's a particular demo, right? As opposed to, you know, the Doritos spot. So again, I think it was an interesting, you know, to see a whole strong mix of different things. But I think, again, like, yeah, I think a lot of people were trying to cast a big net, right? And leaning on humor as a way to kind of bring people in. So unless you're Beyonce and you just reach everybody.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, you're Beyonce and you reach everybody. That's kind of why I didn't bring up that commercial earlier in this. Anyway,
brand brief is reach everyone. Beyonce, done. All right.
Exactly. Check. So Nate, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think the answer is kind of yes and no. I mean, it's a small microcosm of the advertising world. It is not reflective of what almost all advertising is. It is one of the few places where you don't walk in and you're like, yeah, but we're selling, you know. I mean, it's actually the one place where you're like, you can't really sell too hard or else you're going to lose them. So I think in one respect, really we need to look at this conversation very broadly. And in the other, it is the most expensive, highest profile piece of advertising you can do. And it really does reveal the values of the company and the belief of what they believe about their audiences. And you know, you take some of the ads that we talked about, some of them really showed up with a pretty strong commitment to say, nah, this is who we believe is the core audience driving our business. And some showed up with a little bit less of a priority. And not that that's everything, but it is a meaningful data point, I think.
Okay, Morgan?
Yeah, I would say, of course, I think it's important to be looking at on-screen inclusion in the Super Bowl ads, right? The biggest audience, the single biggest TV event of the year. We don't have TV events like this now in the streaming era. But I think this is an equally important conversation when we think about advertising at other times of the year, on other platforms, in different modes. And even if we are being more targeted with those ads on different platforms, there is still an opportunity to increase inclusion within a demographic, within a target group, right? Even if we're looking at, let's say, women, if we're thinking about the menopause commercial, right? Even if we're looking at older women who might be experiencing or soon to be experiencing menopause, women who are older come in all different shapes and sizes. They have different visible disabilities, they have different sexual orientations, they have different skin tones. You still have the opportunity to be inclusive within a more constrained, like, target audience. And so I think this is an important conversation to be having, whether we're talking about, you know, the biggest ads of the year in terms of you know, eyeballs and dollars. I'm not going to say that they are the biggest in other ways. Or if you're thinking about, you know, just the ads that you put out on social in, you know, in November.
Thanks for all of your insights. We're going to go on to the lightning round. Okay. What commercial do you think will have the most staying power?
I'll be honest. I don't think any. There was not, I would hate to bring up Budweiser, but there was like, no, what's up? Like that was like years, right? I don't think any.
Oh, harsh. I love a harsh critic.
I think closest would be Dunkin's. I think it was absurd enough, but enough of a cultural moment where it gave a little bit of a spin on what we think of the, you know, the people in it, the characters that they play on screen in it. Maybe that would be the closest. I personally love the Kawasaki mullet one. Don't think that's going to stand the test of time, but thought it was really fun.
Yeah, the mullet one got a lot of laughs in my house. Okay, Morgan.
I can't think of one that, you know, that's going to stand the test of time, but I'm with Nate. I like the entertaining ones. I liked Dina Mita. I liked, what was the other one? Oh, I like the State Farm one with Arnold. Those ones are just, they're just fun to watch. Will they last for decades? Are they the Budweiser WhatsApp commercial? Probably not, but I enjoyed them.
I want to thank all of you for being on the podcast. That was such a great discussion. And I want to thank all of you for listening. The Work Podcast is available on all of the major podcasting platforms. So please subscribe.